When we talk about mind menopause, what's your definition of the mind part, the mental part of menopause?
What you're talking about here is a complete life transition. It doesn't just happen in the body. It's going to affect your mindset. It's going to affect your decisions, your habits, your behaviours, the way you think about yourself, the way you view the outside world.
So what's happening in the physiology is expressing in the psychology.
Mental health issues are often the ones that are the most debilitating for many women, and they're going to their doctors and doctors are prescribing antidepressants when really they should be prescribing social prescribing or HRT as a first port of call, or looking deeper, you know, if possible. Because I think once we understand what's going on, it's less frightening. Knowledge is power.
And this, I think, is really dangerous. If we don't understand that symptoms are signs and we don't work with them, that leads you down a certain path, which, as you rightly say, if we know about what this might look like, what this might be, how might I investigate this in a better way, the symptom can help you on a, hopefully, a better journey. So that I'm intrigued, how do you address if someone comes to you and is literally carrying way too much guilt? There's even, you know, guilt has its place, but if it's unhelpful guilt, what would you do with that?
I would say drop it like a red hot brick.
Welcome to Mindset, Mood and Movement, a systemic approach to human behavior, performance and well-being. The mind and the menopause, what an interesting set of thoughts. I am delighted to have someone who understands this very well today and will be speaking about for female people, but for men as well to understand this better. How the menopause and the mind really are connected and perhaps what you can do about it. So without further ado, I'm welcoming Sally Garuzzo, who is a specialist in this field. And Sally, welcome.
Hi, Sal. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. I'm really intrigued to talk to you about this subject matter.
Yeah.
I'm always conscious that when I talk about menopause, I've spoken about it in various podcasts, and I speak about it to different people. I'm a man.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like sometimes that's an unusual conversation for a man to be speaking of this. But for our listeners who haven't maybe heard yet, I experienced menopause in two realms. One in the professional realm, where my clients who I'm working with, female clients, are going through it and we have to navigate that. Yeah. Secondly, it's also about my personal realm. So in my personal space, my partner is going through menopause. It's been really difficult. And I've spoken candidly about the challenges as the partner of that. So it's an important topic, irrespective of whether you're male or female. But Sally, perhaps we can jump straight into understanding, when we talk about mind menopause, what's your definition of the mind part, the mental part of menopause that we can get into today?
Oh, there is so much. The mind and the menopause. People think there's a big, big misconception that menopause is just your period stopping. It's something that happens to your ovaries. It's an estrogen deficiency. But to be honest with you, you know, every single cell in the body has got hormone receptors, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. So actually what you're talking about here is a complete life transition. It doesn't just happen in the body. You know, hot sweats actually happen in the brain. They start in the brain. They're a hypothalamic function, something, you know, the thermostat in the brain's not quite right. And because of the all-pervasive effects of menopause, you cannot get away from the fact that it's going to affect your mood, it's going to affect your mindset, it's going to affect your decisions, your habits, your behaviours, the way you think about yourself, the way you view the outside world. So essentially, you know, the menopause affects the mind, but I'm also quite interested as a hypnotherapist, the way that the mind affects the menopause. You know, because the placebo effect is real. And, you know, we know that we can affect our hormones. We can affect our adrenaline levels just by thinking certain things. If we think about a car chase, we start to get an adrenaline response. So I thought, well, could we extrapolate that to menopause? You know, if we gave ourselves some positive suggestions around menopause, i.e. sailing through menopause or igniting our libido or cooling our hot flush or just, you know, going with the flow or regulating, you know, having all those really amazing descriptive words that the subconscious mind really likes. So the subconscious loves a metaphor. If I say to you, oh, just imagine that you're standing on the top of a mountain, there's really cool, crisp air. When you breathe in, you get that sense of cold in your mouth and your nose and your lungs. You start to have a physiological change. So as a hypnotherapist, I was quite interested in the reverse, you know, in how we can make things better for ourselves as we go through this transition. It's not a simple kind of click your fingers and it's done. I think there's so much to it. I think we do really need to be empathetic to the changes that many women and people around women are going through. And I think first and foremost, we need to understand what is really happening in the brain, like what's really happening in the psychology of someone going through menopause, so that we can have empathy. I think it's always empathy first and then solution second. And just to speak to your point there about, you know, something that happened to me when I was going through menopause was this sensation of the rose-coloured spectacles coming off. So 20s and 30s is all about va-va-voom. You know, biology, your biology wants you to reproduce. That's its main driver, its main focus. It's like, go out there, have babies. We will help you. We will make your lips fuller, your hair fuller, your breasts fuller. You'll be really feeling yourself. You'll have this confidence to go and attract a mate. So that's reproductive part of you, that force that you have caused by those hormones, is really not that interested in you reflecting about the past or being too kind of reflective. So when those hormones start to decline and your reproduction isn't prioritized, now things start changing. Now we become more reflective. Now we want to go back and sort all our stuff out from the past. Now that opportunity, that window of opportunity exists because we no longer have that reproductive drive. So, you know, that in itself is a monumental shift. You know, all my values changed. I used to be an adventure seeker, a thrill seeker. I was a tad narcissistic. I was a seductress. You know, and all of that started to change. I started to become much more insecure, much more of a homebody, much more of like someone who was motivated by stability. And, you know, I wanted solid foundations. That's why I got married. You know, I didn't even consider marriage before that. So, yeah, there was a lot of personality shifts within me and actually a big identity shift as well. And of course, any kind of identity shift that we go through, it can be quite cataclysmic. It's a shaky foundation, or I should say our foundation's shape. So yeah, I've gone round in circles there.
It's all good. That's lovely. Really nice intro to what we're covering. I just want to caveat, I'm someone who, you know, most of you, if you don't know me, I work with the mind to a large extent, psychology, cognitive science, neurology, or how we function. And I'm very intrigued about all of those pieces. And my leaning is towards the theory of embodied mind. It feels absolutely accurate to me that we're not just a bunch of thoughts. Those thoughts are mediated and affected by our physiology. So if we are tense in our gut and our jaw muscles, the vagus nerve will send signals to the brain that we're not safe or something like that. So what's happening in the physiology is expressing in the psychology.
Yeah.
Now that's that weave, and I'm interested to go into this is much more with you. So I do want to caveat, this is not just post a note on the mirror and say, I'm fine or I'm happy, which is, that's not the depth we can work at.
No.
Because you can tell yourself that stuff, but you don't buy it. So we got to go to those deeper levels.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued, Sally, because if I'm a female listener and I'm struggling right now with perhaps perimenopause sneaking up, and I've seen this with so many of my clients, they haven't really noticed it coming, but they're all the signals. And I believe it's 7 to 10 years before main menopausal starts, which is what, 45 years old, I'm told. So we're looking at 35-year-old women really may start getting signals and symptoms of the shift starting to happen. What are the mental or psychological markers we need to look for that would be a good tell?
Yeah, definitely. Anxiety. Anxiety is usually what I hear and see and experienced in myself. Is this feeling of something's not right. I'm looking for danger. I'm seeing danger everywhere. You know that reticular activating system where whatever you give meaning to, you see more of. So progesterone declines first. Progesterone is the calming hormone. It's that, makes you feel just chilled. It's like having your personal massage therapist with you all the time, progesterone. That starts to decline first. And as a result of that declining, our cortisol is more prevalent. Cortisol and adrenaline becomes more prevalent. And so it might start with just that those sort of butterflies in your stomach, which might then lead to palpitations because of the increased adrenaline. And also, you know, what is perceived can get worse. It's like that negative spiral. Once you notice something, oh, I've got butterflies. Oh my God, I'm nervous. Why am I so nervous? I would wake up every morning from like age 36, 37. I started waking up every morning with butterflies in my stomach, not knowing. I wasn't nervous about anything. But because I had those butterflies, everything around me felt more nerve-wracking. So, you know, just going to the supermarket just felt more heightened. Things just started feeling more heightened. And I was still acting and behaving, you know, like someone in my 20s and 30s. I was still going for life. I was just moved to Brighton. I was doing a music degree. I was like gigging every night. And so, because there wasn't any progesterone to mitigate that, I became burnt out. And with the burnout, then comes the anxiety, comes insomnia. So anxiety, insomnia, overwhelm, burnout, not knowing what the hell is happening to you, thinking there's just something drastically wrong. I mean, many women report feeling like the early onset dementia. It's probably not. It's likely all these changes that you're trying to navigate. What can also happen is as we go more towards into the depths of perimenopause can be this, again, you know, this loss of identity. It's a big feeling of loss for many women because you're changing so much. You're peeling layers very, very quickly away from you. And that can instigate something like a low mood or depression or this feeling of like, I just cannot get out of bed. I cannot get started. Some of that might be hypothyroid because there's links between menopause and hypothyroid and stress and all of that. But those mental health issues are often the ones that are the most debilitating for many women. And they're going to their doctors, and doctors are prescribing antidepressants when really they should be prescribing social prescribing or HRT as a first port of call, and looking deeper, you know, if possible. Because I think once we understand what's going on, it's less frightening. Knowledge is power.
Definitely. Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. For me, I speak of this a lot, but symptoms are signs. They are signs. And in our current world, if you're in the UK or Europe, America, the general methodology is you look at the symptom and treat the symptom in the medical model. That's how it's done. And there's a place for that. You know, if you've got a headache, it's not nice. You want to get rid of that for sure. But if we use that as an overarching mindset and a methodology to all of these things like, oh, you're presenting with anxiety or presenting with depression, let's medicate that. Rather than, well, what's the symptom telling us? Why is this, you know, maybe reasonably fit 35-year-old woman who's fairly stable suddenly different? And I've seen this. I've seen this with people I know and I've seen it with clients. They are suddenly different and they don't quote unquote have anxiety. They are experiencing the physiobiological, psychological experience of anxiety, but they don't quote have a problem, but they have an experience. And this, I think, is really dangerous. If we don't understand that symptoms are signs and we don't work with them, that leads you down a certain path, which, as you rightly say, if we know about what this might look like, what this might be, how might I investigate this in a better way, the symptom can help you on a, hopefully, a better journey.
It really can.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are your experiences with maybe seeing this either in yourself or some of the people you've worked with where you've caught those symptoms and said, I know what this might look like. Where do you take someone with that? What do you do with that?
I think what you've said there is absolute gold, because I learned that symptoms are your friends. You know, your body cannot hurt you. Your body is a self-organizing biological mechanism, and it's always striving to find balance and homeostasis. Often, you know, like mucus, for example, is our body mopping up a virus, right? But we think that the mucus is the problem. It's not a problem, it's a solution. So I think, well, maybe anxiety is a solution to something that your body is trying to tell you. And for me, it was. It was like, babe, you need to slow down. It's like, you know, there's stuff here that you need to look at. Crying is a solution to an overactive nervous system. It gets the sympathetic part of the nervous system activated so we can calm down. So, you know, the work that I do in hypnotherapy, so I'm a hypnotherapist first and foremost. Boy, do we go deep. You know, people will come with a list of symptoms. I can't stop eating. I'm catastrophizing all the time. I can't sleep. I can't slow my heart rate down. Okay, let's just put that to one side. First of all, tell me what are you believing about yourself? Like, the world is not a safe place. I'm not good enough. Everyone's against me. People don't like me. All this stuff starts to come up because of these symptoms. Okay, well, let's go back. Let's go into childhood. Let's have a look at the environment that you grew up in. Like, what was your mum like? What was your dad like? What were the messages that you were receiving as a child? And what happened to you to create the person that you are today, which was masked by your estrogen, your testosterone, your progesterone, but now it's all now coming up because those rose-coloured glasses are coming off. So when we do a lot of inquiry into the history, we can very easily see what the messages were and how you're acting them out today, how you're compensating or how you have been compensating, how what role did you take on, what cloak did you wear? And we can start to unpick it and go, well, do you need to do that anymore? A lot of the problem that I see actually in menopause is women not being able to prioritize themselves or feeling guilty for self-care, feeling guilty for speaking up for their needs, feeling guilty for asking for an extra day off, feeling, oh no, I can't, that'll put too much pressure on everyone else. Maybe that's not your problem. Maybe that's the boss's problem or the, you know, whoever owns the business, that we all need to work together so that we as women go through menopause can get our needs met a bit more. You know, so, and I think women are very much conditioned into got to be everything, do everything, have everything, especially this generation. Because we grew up in the 1980s when it was shoulder pads, Margaret Thatcher. You know, we had that sort of power woman influence. Thankfully, things are starting to change now. But yeah, I've lost my thread now.
That's fine. I really want to speak to that point. I see this come up so often, particularly with my female clients, particularly with business owner, founders, that sort of thing. The do-it-all sneaky belief pattern. And it's a belief virus. That's what it is. So I work and I use this language because we can relate to it. Like, a virus is something which takes hold and just propagates. And that's what that belief virus is. It's imbued from somewhere and it's not yours, that you should do it all, could do it all. Who says? That's the first question that we, any of us, but particularly for that, for a female, needs to say, who says I need to do it all? And secondly, I would then even add, who says that's even possible? Because if you're trying to achieve an unsurmountable goal, the only way you can experience life is as a failure. So it's a rigged game. Psychologically, it's a rigged game. And with any rigged game, it's rubbish. Don't play. So in many ways, people like you will hopefully help call that belief virus out. And the whole do it all is actually not the end of the thought. I've got a client in mind and we worked with this pattern and she was a high achiever. She was a mom, she had marriage and, you know, doing really well and was trying to do it all. So there were several things I didn't like about that phrase that we unpacked. Trying, there's a lot of efforting in that, but trying is not accomplishing. There's never a finish point with the word trying. And then doing it all, it's like, who says, where's this come from? And we unpacked that and disseminated that belief virus to some degree.
Amazing.
I want to also speak to the other point you made about guilt. And I see this all the time, much more in the female domain than the male. Us blokes are more shame driven. Certainly I am. Men I've worked with, shame is the dark force which traps us or causes problems. But with women, it's often guilt. I can't take a day off, or, you know, I've got to stay strong for the kids, or whatever the belief is, because it's laden with guilt. And I envisage guilt as this heavy backpack.
Yeah.
If you know what rucking is, like heavy backpack, and like, why are you wearing that backpack?
Right.
Put it down. So I'm intrigued, how do you address if someone comes to you and is literally carrying way too much guilt? There's even, you know, guilt has its place, but if it's unhelpful guilt, what would you do with that?
I would say drop it like a red hot brick. Well, I'd look at where it comes from. I'd look at where maybe a pattern of guilt started. I think it can be very ancestral as well. You know, my mum had guilt because her mum had guilt, and it goes back. Really, I've got a picture behind me that says rebels get results. Okay. And what I love about menopause is the no Fs given attitude that you can sort of have when you go through this period. And for me, it's about taking my power back, rebelling against the status quo. So if the status quo, you know, that thing that's always been there, totally unconsciously, maybe we've got that from ancestors, maybe we've got that from society, capitalism. I mean, God, capitalism's got a lot to answer for in terms of like this paradigm of belief that says growth is the only viable aspect of life, the only viable modus operandi. Well, it's not, is it? Because cancer is a thing that can't stop growing, you know? So that's not very good. People don't like cancer. We don't want cancer. We don't need it. And yet that's a thing that has like a growth. It's a growth. So let's stop growing. And maybe that's okay. Like maybe it's okay. Maybe there is growth in not growing, you know, let's flick the switch. So I'm a big rebel at heart. And I think I probably always have been really, but it's a way of me feeling like I'm taking my power back. So yeah, of course, you know, I still struggle with overproductivity and all of that, but I really do listen to my body. I really do. Like, I don't go out in the week. I save my going out for the weekend. I make sure I schedule nice things in. I don't overschedule my diary. I quite like it when my diary is empty. And yeah, like if I see people on social media really overdoing it, I just feel exhausted by it and I don't want to be anything like that. I work to my own pace. I work to my own rhythm. I'm a big believer in this idea of living rhythmically, okay? Living with the seasons, living with the moon cycles, living with our own internal rhythms, whatever they may be for us. You know, it's just about living authentically, taking your power back, rebelling against the status quo, and just dropping that guilt and understanding where that guilt comes from, knowing it's not yours. It was a message that latched onto you and started leeching off you. It's time to take it off now, you know?
Beautiful. I want to add to that because I'm hot on this one. Feelings are there for a reason, but they can be maladaptive. So the reason for guilt is an emotion that tells us we've done something wrong. That's its valid use. So if you upset someone because you did something and you feel guilty, it's because maybe you did something wrong and maybe you need to go and talk to them and apologize and say, hey, I'm sorry about that. You know, can we talk about it? And therein, then you flow out of it. So if guilt is not accurate, why are you having it is a really good question.
That's a good question.
So beautifully alluded to, like whose guilt is this?
Yeah.
Because we model, you probably know about developmental psychology, but the clever people that bother studying humans for a long time, roughly we look at the 0 to 7 years old of a child. And in that time, our brain is in sort of alpha and theta states, which are pretty much trancey states, hypnotherapy states. And we are lovely little sponges. And, you know, the young girl's looking at mom and society and whatever those messages are being modeled. So however the societal messages are, we model them. And I love the fact that that rebel archetype you're speaking about is in you. And I hope you imbue that in other women, because if you don't push back to the orthodoxy, you're asleep in many ways. You're doing what other people want of you. That may not fit. And another point I want to speak to and go a little deeper is biorhythms. So biorhythms is something I work with in my work with all people, but particularly women. Now, women know this more than men because of the menstrual cycle and all the different phases of that cycle. With the disruption of perimenopause and menopause, that cycle's all over the place. But whose rhythms are we rolling by? If we're looking at a 9-to-5 job or, you know, 9-to-6 business plan or Monday to Friday, That's just a model. That's a framework that doesn't fit human frameworks. We spoke before the call about being dark at this time of year. And for me, I need more sleep in the summer. I can be up super early. And I know other people are like this. So what's your understanding of working with your biorhythms, maybe personally and maybe with people? How can a person work, particularly a woman, how can she work better with those biorhythms and really be authentic, as you said?
Yeah, rhythms are fantastic because when we play into the rhythm, when we work with our rhythms, we become so much healthier and happier. And our physiology sorts itself out. We don't need loads of supplements. We don't often need medication. Things sort themselves out. So I had insomnia. Insomnia was one of my worst menopausal symptoms. And in order to fix insomnia, you really, really have to set a very, very strong internal rhythm. So for me, insomnia taught me more about rhythm than I think my monthly cycle did, to be honest. Because if you're not sleeping, it has very dramatic effects on your life pretty quickly. You become debilitated. You can't really do very much. So I had to learn how to sleep very quickly. And what I learned was daylight's very important and darkness is very important. So getting daylight in your eyes as soon as you wake up, if possible, is very good. So getting up and getting out. I wear grounding trainers. So I've got these special trainers that have got silver woven through them. You can just wear leather-soled shoes if you want. I have these. So I ground myself, you know, get those negative ions going through my body, sunlight directly into my eyes, really, really important. And then what you'll find in it, as the day goes on, you will have other rhythms as well. So you might have a dip in energy in the afternoon. It's really important to recognize that and listen to your body. Take more breaks if you need to. Go and have a lie down if you need to. This is why I'm a big advocate for rest rooms in workplaces and reset rooms. You know, you can if you're interested in growth, you can massively increase your output if you rest a bit more in the afternoon. And then with nighttime, obviously the blue light blocking glasses, I have a filter on my screen. It's called Flux. If anyone's interested, it's F.LUX. You pop it on your computer and you don't even notice, but your screen goes orange as it goes dark. It's tuned into your location. It's tuned into light levels and stuff. So that's super important. Then going to bed exactly the same time every night, waking up at exactly the same time every day. I don't need an alarm clock. I fall asleep at the drop of a hat now. I pretty much sleep right through the night. I might wake up a little bit, but if I do, I can get myself back off to sleep because I'm not worrying about it anymore. I think that's important. I think seasonally, going with the seasons is important. I will caveat that by saying I think I'm a vampire because I love the dark. I actually I have more energy in the winter than I do in the summer. Too many photons and it drives me mad. I think it's too much electromagnetic energy I don't need anymore. So, yeah, and then, of course, the cycles. You know, we have our autumn, winter, summer. What's the other one? Spring. Within the weeks, if we're cycling, if we're having periods, we've got those weeks that have a different energy and a different flavour. But also we have those seasons through our entire life. So perimenopause is synonymous with the autumn, the whole of that phase. And then when we go into menopause itself is winter. And then as we come out into postmenopause, we go into second spring, which is this wonderful, like, I'm reborn phase. Then we have a second summer, sort of like in our 70s. And then as we decline and go towards death, that's our final winter. So, you know, nature's got it. Nature's got everything that we need, really. And if we just, okay, the big one, here's a big one. It's about slowing down so that we can hear those rhythms, because we can easily override those rhythms. But if we consciously and intentionally slow down, we actually get to listen to what our body is trying to tell us. And I think that's incredibly powerful.
Wow, wonderful. Good advice. I want to speak to a point here because this is stepping into perhaps the existential question where we're like, okay, this is all good. This is all practical things we can do. And Sally's got this. And yeah, that makes sense. Slowing down, becoming more authentic. Several things I want to say. Firstly, we are nature. There's a misunderstanding. People think humans and nature are separate things. we are nature. We have the same biochemicals, carbon atoms, molecular structure. We have our lungs really much replicate trees in terms of the fractal patterns. So the neurons. So we are nature. We forget. And then the question I find fascinating, I've often posed this to a client, well, how come we're forgetting? What's that really about? Because you know this, most people are fairly smart. Women I work with are generally pretty intuitive. So the skill's there. So what's stopping the skill happening? And I wonder if there's this, A, we've got too busy, for sure. There's a practical, like busy, busy, busy. So it's too noisy. The world's too noisy. And secondly, I think there's an existential angst underneath it. And I love a bit of misery of existentialism. It's looking into the abyss without fear. It's like, oh, okay, this is how dark it is. And there is something about, to quote Oliver Berkman of 4,000 Weeks, looking at our finitude, you know, looking at the finitude of our life. Like, we don't get that long. If you're lucky, you get 100 years. And that ain't long. You know, we are finitude. Things are running out. Now, that can feel like it's a bit of a dark proposition and people are like, oh, I don't think about it. It's like, but if you did think about it, then you may be making choices that are better for you. So if you realize, well, we are finitude, every one of us will run out. This conversation will end. Today will end. This month will end. Even the problem time will end. But if we don't face the end, the metaphorical end of us, I don't think we then realize what our priorities are. And I wonder if that would be a pretty jarring, but hopefully, you know, a bit like an alarm bell, a psychological alarm bell that goes, yeah, what am I doing? Yes. Why am I running around like a blue bottomed fly?
Oh, you're so polite.
The old expression goes. And I do wonder if there is an existential angst when we scratch underneath it. There's something like, yeah, I don't want to actually look at that. But
yeah,
you alluded to it. When you work with symptoms and look at them and knowledge is power, suddenly the scary bit's gone. It takes it away, doesn't it?
Oh, do you know, I'm really into a bit of existentialism and philosophy at the moment. And for me, this is what menopause has brought up. So in my insomnia, when you're laying awake in the middle of the night, what are you thinking? You're thinking about what's going to happen to me when I die. Who's going to look after me? I don't have children. I could die alone in my bed. I don't know. And so all these things start coming up to the surface, but I think they're meant to. I think we are meant to look at these questions, and especially as we get older, because whatever you resist persists. So if you don't start looking at these questions, it will just knock louder and louder and louder and louder and louder until you do. And also, I'm a big believer that once you start looking, it's not always as bad as you think it might be, because you realise that it's going to happen to all of us. Every single person on the planet is going to die. We are going to turn to dust. And so that's what we have in common, right? And our biggest fear is rejection. And our biggest need is connection. And if we can all connect in that, then I think there's something in that. I think there's some magic in that. Just to contemplate, I think we become more contemplative as we get older. I don't need anything. I can just sit there for an hour and look out the window and think. I really love thinking. Life is short. And I think when we understand that life is short, then it can motivate us to really do something about whatever ails us, you know, to take our power back, to maybe eat better, to exercise more, to contemplate more, to face those fears, and to do all the things we know we might have been putting off. So there is a sense of urgency. There can be, you know, symptoms do create that sense of urgency, like, because they're hard to live with. It's all well and good saying they are your friends, but we want to move past them. We just need to understand them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a cliche probably battered around on social media, but I think it goes something like this, that if when your body whispers to you and you don't listen, then it will start to scream at you. And it is a cliche, but I think that can be the problems in certainly health domains and psychological domains. So are you listening is the question. Are you listening? And then the next question will be, well, what are you going to do with that? You know, you're going to seek help. Are you going to learn about this? There's great resources around. You know, one thing I want to talk to is a woman's connection to her body, for sure. And I know women have, there's a lot of challenges in this whole space of even this conversation that, you know, you should look this way, you should be that, all these shoulds. Take that aside for 1 minute. The relationship to our body, I think it's really interesting when we actually make it work, like get it working very well. And I mean that through physical activity, heavy stuff, like carrying heavy things, moving heavy things, running, things that make us sweat, things that are effortful physically. And I, as you know, I work with S&C, strength and conditioning, as much as psychology. I'd see the world of personal development is only right, in my view, if you include the body to some degree, whatever the amount is required. But if we don't, we only hang out in the abstract domain of thinking and we don't shift. And there's so much in experiential feeling of the body. And of course, there's research around now. There's great people. She's a female trainer, all about training women in menopause. I'll add it to the show notes. But the research says, if you're going through peri or at menopause and you're not exercising, like literally get that in your system, like wherever you start, you don't have to be an athlete today or even next year, but if you're not moving, you're sedentary and you're not carrying anything heavy, that physiological drop off is so steep anyway. Add in menopause, hormonal shifts, the chemistry jets out of balance. We got osteoporosis issues, we got joint issues, and so on and so forth. Sarcopenia, muscle wastage. What's your take on the exercise prescription, if you will, for you, perhaps, and for women that you're working with? What are you doing with that?
Yeah, it's absolutely essential. When I was having anxiety and insomnia, a friend of a friend, she's very direct. She plays tennis. She's very fit. She said to me, well, maybe you're not exercising enough. You need to exhaust yourself. I was like, okay. So from that point, I wasn't moving very much at all, to be honest. And from that point, I got myself a personal trainer. It's the best investment I've ever made, if I'm honest. I stopped working with that personal trainer a couple of weeks ago, and I'm now working with another personal trainer because the equipment that my old PT had wasn't enough. I needed stronger, heavier weights. I needed to go to a proper gym. It's absolutely essential, you know, as you say, to lift heavy, to move the body. I'm doing couch to 5K at the moment, which is brilliant. If you've never done running before, start with couch to 5K. I have found it to be incredibly enjoyable. I never thought I'd enjoy running. I'm built more for power and lifting than I am for endurance. So I always felt like a bit of a lump as I was running. But couch to 5K has really helped me put a spring in my step. We need to start thinking of muscle as an actual organ. It is an organ. It's a metabolic organ. And the more muscle you have, which we know declines as we go through menopause, as you said, sarcopenia sets in and we get muscle wasted. Now, I wasn't lifting heavy probably for about a year, and I noticed how I wasn't able to lift the shopping as easy. I used to be able to like lift the couch and, you know, I couldn't do that anymore. So it does go. It's so important to prioritize for your physical health and for your mental health. If you know you can lift heavy, it really builds your confidence. I'm a big believer that if you've been disempowered, which a lot of women have, you've got to find your power again. And if you can do something that is a physical manifestation of power, as in weightlifting, you are going to feel so powerful internally and in your mind as well. And you're going to be able to put that into your relationships, your friendships, your work, back into you again. So it's like you become an energy generating machine through that output. Yeah, it's fascinating how lifting heavy things does that to us.
It does. It's amazing. My partner who I train, she's with me on my own S&C program, strength and conditioning program. She'll often say to me, I need to lift heavy today. And it's been a good few years. I remember, so just caveat this, I remember when I used to do lots of heavy stuff and do CrossFit training, and she'd be looking like, why do you do that? I'm like, yeah, it's about the feeling. Because she'd be like, you know, you're doing all this stuff, I know all these strong, challenging exercises. And she was genuinely interested, like, why does a person do that? I'm like, well, yes, of course it's hard work. That's the whole point of it. But it's the feeling. And I explained to her, I said, it's something you can't tell a person. It's a bit like being in love and telling a Martian who'd come down to Earth, like, what being in love's like. You can't speak of it. You have to feel it. And the same with that feeling payoff of physical exertion, physical strength building, maybe energy power. You have to know. Anyway, I remember the first time she picked up a heavy sandbag. I have them in the house and to lift them. And that was the time when she started. So we fast forward to today. And when she's having a tough time through menopausal impact, if you will, or influence, she'll just say, I need to lift heavy today. I'm so in my head. It's so much going on. And, you know, body weight, carrying your body weight through a deadlift or heavy carry. She's literally, I see and I watch her. She physically changes in front of my eyes. Her skin changes, the color in her skin changes, her eyes change. And I'm never not amazed by the impact of this. But I just want to say for people who, particularly for women who don't understand, there's still a notion around what women should and shouldn't do and what's going to happen. So firstly, you're right. Everyone should be strong, in my belief, strong enough to live your life and feel good, whatever that strength metric is for you. Strength equals confidence. Strength has a whole load of physiological things like other stuff we've covered already around the muscle loss and so forth. But how you feel translates into being able to have autonomy over your symptoms and your situation. And I think that's a wonderful, powerful thing. If a woman is struggling with, you know, an anxious day because the, you know, estrogen's all over the place, you can't change that. Even if you're on HRT, that's a slow drip process. But you can go train. And that can be such a gift. And by the way, you won't get quote unquote bigger muscly. So I've had a few say, when I get really muscly, I'm like, well, if you do hypertrophy training, which is lots and lots of reps, which is often what a lot of women did, like, oh, I'm going to do toning. It's like, no, that's what they did in the 80s, low weight, high reps. That actually, if you do it well enough, will build your muscles bigger. You need to be doing heavy weight, low reps.
Yeah,
PB work with stuff. A trainer though. Yeah, work with a trainer, because if you're at the beginning of the journey, you need to be ready for it. But higher weight, low reps, you get strength development, not muscle size development. So it's again, if you're worried about the aesthetic of it, get the right knowledge. It's all out there. There's PTs, S&C trainers, you can go on the internet. But the strength development translates into so much emotional and psychological development. It's a non-negotiable for everyone.
Yeah, me too. Women. Me too. It's overcoming. For me, it was knowing that it was a thing that would make me feel better. And then just the idea of going to a gym and trying to lift heavy weights without any foundational knowledge or practice was just, it didn't feel like it would have been achievable. So I think having a PT is something, because then you can have, like, I just have one session a week and then I do the stuff in the gym on my own because I've had that session. I know what I'm doing. I've got like maybe an app on my phone, like Apple Fitness or something. I can do, can just do the exercise along with that. Or just keep it really simple. I mean, squats and deadlifts, clean and press, you don't really need to do much else. So, yeah. And I think also as well, a lot of women that perhaps have never trained before might not see themselves as weightlifters. So that whole thing of like having a visualization of yourself, having a certain image of yourself, lifting weights might go against that. I think we have to do some work around, well, who said you can't lift weights? Where did that original image come from? You know, I think we have to question all of that, because our true nature as Neanderthals and tribal people would have been, as you say, strong.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Well, I have a sense where it comes from. It's, you know, largely a patriarchal male domain. You know, it used to be that the man, we look up every fairy tale, it's the hero, right? Hero, yeah. Archetype of the man and the save. Poor woman's being saved, and oh, save me, save me. But that's quite a modern phenomenon. It's actually quite a Western phenomenon. If you look at the Okinawa ladies in Japan, they free dive. And if you've ever free dived, it's quite a rare thing. That's an incredibly tough skill. So you've got to hold your breath and dive underwater with strength and get, and they, the things, what they do, like shells and that, and they come back up. If you Google it, have a look at it, the Okinawa ladies, and a lot of them in their 80s.
That's amazing.
I just love that. So we need to be very careful of these psychological labels and these restrictions we put on ourselves, particularly women, like shoulds and shouldn'ts. If the word should and shouldn't's coming up, that's someone else's label, and it may not be right for you. So it's a really big field. I would just caveat this. If you are thinking about training, go get the right guidance first, because you can hurt yourself, right? Yes. If you pick up a heavy weight and you're not conditioned because you heard that you should lift heavy, you can get an injury and then you can confirm your bias, which is, see, I shouldn't exercise. So definitely, there's loads of places you can go to, loads of PTs of all kinds, sort of group classes. Start small, but connect with the body. It's a liberating thing.
Can I just say something? Because in 2010, I had spinal surgery. I had a really bad herniated disc between L5 and S1. It started popping out, got worse and worse and worse. I was bent over. I couldn't stand up straight for like 6 weeks. I had to walk with walking sticks. I was like 35. It was mad. I felt like an 80-year-old. Hopefully I won't be like that when I'm 80. And I did have a lot of, you know, the idea of lifting, doing deadlifts in my mind was just like, no, that's not me. That's not who I am. I have a bad back. And because of the lack of strength in my core and in my back, the lack of stability in that area, because I just sort of created this idea that I dissociated from it because of the pain, you know, I went off into my head. That made it worse. Like you say, that confirmation bias, oh, there's a twinge, I need to rest. Well, my surgeon was like, you know what? It's, yeah, obviously if there's like a really sharp pain, go easy on yourself. But the best thing to do is just that, just train it so that you can overcome it and use the mind. And even if I do, I mean, I'm quite used to living with back pain now, but I still do deadlifts. And I find that in a couple of days, that pain settles down. So there's ways around injuries.
There are, and a lot of it is you don't understand what you're doing. So if you don't understand how to cook a certain meal, it's going to be messy. If you don't put the right ingredients in, the whole thing's going to be out of balance and it's going to be too wet, too, whatever. Deadlifts, most people who get it wrong are hinging from the wrong place, because it's nothing more simple than bending over and picking something off the floor. It's a hinge movement. A lot of people hinge from their lower back and not from the hip joints. And yeah. This is fundamental. I had a lovely guy's movement specialist on a recent podcast, Tom Waldron. Tom shared with us, the first thing he would do with someone is say, find the top of your hip joints. And most people point to the wrong bit, like the outside of their hips or their lower back. And actually the hip joint, when you find the real where the bone is, deep in the thigh, that is where we hinge from. And it's quote unquote as simple as that. So if you hinge from the right place and you use the back line of the body, the hamstrings, the glutes and the core stable, and it's one hinge, your lower back is working to some degree. It's part of that posterior chain. But what we get, I think, is that if we do something wrong, we hurt ourselves, then it becomes, you know, predictive brain theory, like, oh, that's not good for me. I can't do that. I've got a bad back or sore knees. It's like, No. Once again, it's the symptom principle. The symptoms showing you need to figure this out. Either see a doctor, see a GP, see a PT, work with a movement specialist. Because actually the symptom is showing you something needs to change as opposed to something needs to stop. So I think this is where movement domains come in well. Yoga, Pilates, of course, are good ones because they're a little slower and steadier. But running, weight training. If you can feel your body, you know what it needs. If you have a complete disconnect from your glute muscles, like can't even feel them, well, how are they going to work? So it's as simple as that. So getting into the body can be an absolute gift. And I would say in a world that's very cerebral and very, you know, if we think of our content experience of a lot of screen, we are so in our heads, literally, that if we get into our bodies, it's a liberating thing.
Definitely.
Now, Sally, I want to pick on one last really key point. For a lot of my listeners and people I work with, they're busy and they're running a business. They might say, yeah, this is all very well, but this is all very good, but, you know, there may be some reservations in there.
Sure.
And you have your own business. What salient advice would you give to a founder or businesswoman? How she might deal with both running her business and carrying on, because that's super important, and dealing with all these things that may be going on. We've already alluded to some things you can do, but what might be the most salient thing that will get through to that person?
Productivity hacks are amazing. So getting your gym kit out the night before, really handy just to future pace, I think. You know, someone that is running a business is going to be busy. However, looking at, you know, your body's going through a change. Is your business, is the vision of your business in alignment with your changing body and with what you are wanting to achieve for yourself over the next 5 to 10 years. So I think that's, yeah, I think that's probably where it's at. And I, you know, every year I sort of do a bit of a values audit and look at the direction of my business, where it's going, maybe think, I could do with adding a little bit more passive income, or I'm not quite ready to give up my one-to-ones. Definitely don't want to do as much public speaking as I used to. As you know, this year, now I'm through menopause, I feel like I can do more public speaking. You know, so really modifying your business. And when you are a founder, you kind of have that luxury. If you're working for a corporation, you don't have as much flexibility. But I do think that flexibility is actually very, very important. So asking for what you need, asking for time off when you need time off, for a reset room, for different temperature, for maybe doing a Zoom meeting rather than an in-person meeting. Have some idea of what would be useful for you so that you can put a solution forward if you work in a place of work. But yeah, I think productivity hacks alongside who am I, where am I going with this, very, very useful.
Nice. So productivity, identity, and alignment all coming together.
Yeah.
Really nice. And it's something I find really interesting when I'm coaching founders who, you know, it's very much a business-led conversation, but I'll always talk to the human who's leading it.
Right.
And I love what you said there about actually, is this in line with not just you as a person, but in it's your body. Like, what do you want to look like in the next 5 years, 10 years? And where are you going to be? What does the shape of the business look like? And does the shape of your life fit that? Because if it doesn't, we've got a square peg in a round hole, so to speak.
Exactly.
Very important. So actually, it becomes it sounds to me like a fundamental strategic process that a business owner can do, which means when you get to that 5 or 10 year checkpoint, you're either feeling good working with your body and your needs, or you're in a deep pool of dark brown stuff. And then it's even more hard to sort out. Cool. Yeah. Wow. Sally, you are a really font of knowledge on this space. I'm privileged to be part of the conversation, as always. It intrigues me that menopause, of course, it's directly for women. Yes. And women get a tough deal. And I genuinely mean that. I think as a bloke, we don't get such a tough deal because you're like, I don't understand what that's like. But I do know what it's like on the receiving end as a partner. I do know what it's like to sit with a woman who's struggling to make it all work.
Yeah.
And we are all together in this. So even if you are not in menopause, maybe you're male and you happen to be listening to this because you want to understand more, we are all in this. So the better we can kind of be more connected and understand what each person needs, you know, whether it's the partner or the woman or your friend or your colleague, then better things happen for all. So thank you for sharing your wisdom and knowledge. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Questions, of course, dear listener, if they come in, you can reach us on the various social media platforms that this has come out on. You can contact Sally. I'll leave details in show notes. Or you can contact me. Again, there'll be some details in show notes. So reflect on much that's come up. I always recommend this. So when I hear a good podcast, as I walk and hear my podcast, I'm like, oh, that's great. I make sure I block out 1 hour and I go back at a sensible time. Maybe it's in the afternoon, and I'll skip through the podcast and think, yeah, there was that point they said about X, or there's point about, and I'll literally, and I'll capture it on my Mac and I'll put it in a notes folder, because gold, if you sift it, don't throw it away.
Love that.
Till the next time, dear listener, take care. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe. And if a friend would benefit from hearing this, do send it on to them as well. If you would like to get in touch yourself, then you can go to my website, which is saljefferies.com, spelled SaljeFFeries. saljefferies.com. Hit the get in touch link, and there you can send me a direct message. If you'd like to go one step further and learn whether coaching can help you overcome a challenge or a block in your life, then do reach out and I offer a call where we can discuss how this may be able to help you. Until the next time, take care.